toward the end of Parshas Vayera, we have the exciting news of the birth of Yitzchak Avinu to Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu at an old age. And then we find, we're picking up in the 21st chapter, Perakav Aleph, Pasuk Tet, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. So she said to Abraham, "Drive out the slave woman with her son, for the son of that slave woman shall not inherit with my son, with Yitzchak." The matter greatly distressed Abraham regarding his son. So God said to Abraham, "Be not distressed over the youth or your slave woman. Whatever Sarah tells you, Shema B'kolah, since through Yitzchak, ki b'Yitzchak yikara l'chazara, will offspring be considered yours. But the son of the slave woman as well will I make into a nation, for he is your offspring." So Abram awoke in the morning, took bread and skin of water, and gave them to Hagar. And we discussed this in the past, this whole story. And I want to focus in on Mirza Shem this year, this part of the story. He placed them on her shoulder along with the boy and sent her off. She departed and strayed in the desert of Beersheba. The Hebrew, Vatelech Vateta, she departed and she strayed in the desert of Beersheba. When the water of the skin was consumed, she cast off the boy beneath one of the trees. She went and sat herself down at a distance. Trees is literally sichim, like one of the bushes. Some bow shot away, for she said, "Let me not see the death of the child." And she sat at a distance, lifted up her voice, and wept. God heard the cry of the youth, and an angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heeded the cry of the youth in his present state." Basher Husham, there's a lot of Torah on that, but not for today. "Arise, lift up the youth, and grasp your hand upon him," which seems to be extra, "for I will make a great nation of him." Then Hashem opened her eyes, and she perceived a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the youth to drink. God was with the youth, and he grew up. He dwelt in the desert and became an accomplished archer, a rove kasha. He lived in the desert of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. This particular section should ring a little bit more familiar than most, since we just learned it on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And obviously what we're going to talk about today, obviously not only is about the parsha, not only about life, but clearly, as we'll see, connected to Rosh Hashanah, most obviously. One pasuk, one question for today, and it's to explain to Rashi. And again, I've said this over and over again, and Rosh Hashem, on Mav Esrim, will continue to say this. The godless of learning is not just in breadth, but also in depth. How we can take a look at one Maimer of Chazal, one Rashi, one understanding of our sages, and see there's multiple levels of depth for us to learn for our lives, and that is what's so exciting about learning, and that's the Amkus, that's Miniyam, that we can never tire of studying. On this idea of Vatelech Vateta Bamidbar, that she was wandering in the desert, source 2, Vatetan strayed. Once Hagar was in the desert and away from Avram's control, she strayed back to the idolatry of her father's house. This is what Chazal say, that she went back, Chazra legugulei beit aviha. The Rashi in 4, the Hebrew of the Rashi is 4, Vatelech Vateta Chazra legugulei beit aviha. She went back to the idolatry of her father's house. Now, the question we need to ask on this is a very obvious question. Rav Wolbe in Source 4 asks this question. He can't mean literally that she went to be a person who worshipped idols. Because right afterwards in our section, a malach comes to her. A malach appears to her. And we know that Avraham Avinu marries her again. As keturah shemaseh ninim keketoreh. Her actions are as beautiful as the incense. So what does it mean that vatelach vateta, that she's wandering up? She went back, Chazra legugulei beit aviha. And also we need to understand, we're talking about a matter of hours, if maybe days. Like, suddenly like that, you're in Avraham Avinu's house, now you're in the Midbar, boom, you leave everything. It seems to be so hard to understand. And indeed, where do you learn this? From the words, Vatelach Vateta. She went and she wandered. That means she went back. Chazra L'Gigulei Ben Avia. Does it not mean that she wandered in the desert? From where does Rashi, from where does Chazal, where do Chazal learn that it means that she went back to idolatry? So I'd like to try to understand in a little bit more depth this Rashi. I'd like to understand it on 3.5/4 levels. Just two other nekudos before we begin. On the idea in source number 19, Vayifkach Elokim et Einaha, then God opened her eyes. The Torah does not say that a whale was created miraculously to be. The verse implies that her eyes were open and she saw a whale that had been there all along. This teaches that God always provides what we need, but must be ready to open our eyes and see it. And this is indeed the pasuk that is used when people lose things, right? That you say this pasuk 3 times, there's a whole nusach, a whole thing to say, that God opened her eyes, it was right in front of her. The well wasn't created anew, but God opened her eyes that she was able to see this well, and that's what we daven for when we lose something, like your keys are right in front of your nose. You just happen not to see them, and you're davening that God should open your eyes. The other point that I'd like to Mirtz Hashem work on here is not only that Chazal are very critical of Hagar, but on the words Vatelech Vateta, she wandered in the desert, but they're also critical on the Pasuk Yudalit, when it says that she went and filled Vatelech Vatimale Tachemat, that she went and filled the Pasuk Yudalit, she went and filled the flask with water. Hada Amar, the Medrash says, source 3, Michoseret Amana Haita. She was lacking emuna. That she was afraid that she was going to run out of water, so she filled it to the top. That was a choser emuna. This was a lack of emuna. You're starving. Your kid is starving. You're passing out from water. She thinks her kid is going to die. She fills the, pitcher with water. And Chazal immediately say, Choser Emunah, this is the lack of faith. What is going on here? How do we understand this as well? So the idea of Vatelech Vateta, she went back to her father's house, as well as the idea of filling up the flask with water, this is a lack of Emunah, obviously needs to be understood. And what lessons we learned for our lives. Let's take a look. Approach number one. Approach number one is Rav Wolbe. Rav Wolbe says the following, source 4. V'im kein mahu abeyor shechazra l'gugulei beit avia. If the malach is talking to her, she can't be involved in Avodah Zarah. If Avraham Avinu is going to remarry her, she obviously can't be involved in Avodah Zarah. Ela kevan sheyatza mibeit Avraham Avinu v'alchala. Since she left Avraham Avinu's house and was wandering in the desert, the thought crossed her mind, you know what? Maybe I should return back home to my father's house. Just remind ourselves, Hagar was Paro's daughter. Paro, when Avraham and Sarah were down in Egypt, and Paro witnessed all these miracles, said, better that my daughter be a shivcha in this home than a gvira, than a mistress in Egypt, than a princess in Egypt. So for a moment she thought, let me go back to my father's house. That idea, the wandering, it's almost as if it's metaphorical, not only wandering physically, but her mind wandered back to the possibility of returning to her father's house. It's as if it was considered that she returned to the ways of her father. Or she had a weakening of Amunah. We'll see this from Yirtz Hashem on the third level. The weakening of Amunah happened because of her father's house. But not that she actually went back to worship her father. Two options. One, the thought of going returning to her father's house, or the weakening of Amunah, which we'll see, was caused by where her origins, where she came from. And Rav Wolbe, once again, in the Pasuk, when Yitzchak Avinu goes to Be'er L'chai Ro'i to bring Hagar back, Rav Volbi once again, Shirei Chumash, brings this idea. He says, Ulam be'emet, the underline, he nishara tamidam ufekat shal Sari Meinu. She was the prime student of Sari Meinu. She was a woman of greatness. So what does it mean, shechazra legulei beit aviha? Ela tzariach ladat yesod zeh. You have to know a certain principle in the Torah, and I'd like to develop this from Yirtz Hashem. Hatara lo mivateret al shum netiyah shel adam. The Torah gives no leeway when it comes to analyzing the personalities in Tanakh. Lo ktanah v'lo gdolah, not big, not small. Be'emet hayta kan eizu netiyah ktanah shechashva la'atzma. Just the thinking, ulai kedai lachzor lebeit aviha. Perhaps it's best to return to my father's house. That the Torah calls chazra legugulei beit aviha. And kan tunas hasakana shebilimud chumash. This is where the danger in learning chumash comes. Shela alim lomoda to chumash b'tzura gasa. You can learn Chumash in such a way where you think that people are doing terrible things and you misunderstand what the Chumash means by the idea of a sin. What we have here on this first level is something very important, something fundamental in learning Chumash. And that is, when the Torah says that she's lacking emunah. When the Torah says, and we'll talk about this in a minute, in Mirtz Hashem, a few minutes. When the Torah says that she went back to her father's house, or the idolatry of her father, don't read Chumash as, okay, now she's an Aved Avodah Zarah. No. You have to understand what the Torah means on Torah terms. It's not that she went back, but even a small thought is considered as if she has swayed and she has wandered. This idea of analyzing the Chumash, Tanakh, the Navi, Tzuvim, in light of Chazal, Rav Dessler speaks about in Chelek Aleph in the Hebrew, in Chelek Beis, and Strive for Truth in the English. It's an English volume of Strive for Truth that we have in front of us. The Torah standards, Source 6, are certainly the highest possible. And he says, the Torah is high above all human prejudice, and its judgments represent the absolute truth. As Yeshaya Navi says, Sur 7, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways, say Hashem. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. And you see this clearly, says Rav Dessler, as an example. It follows that the way the Torah perceives sin is extremely subtle. The term microscopic, quote-unquote, is an understatement when describing the fine precision of its judgment. And he says, take, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock, right? He's called Yano and Mantenbi, Yudinkoza Kiddush Hashem, terrible things in the Chumash. You look among the Mefarshim, no one can agree what his sin was. The Abarbanel brings down 10 interpretations, then offers his own. And no one agrees exactly what it was. Why? Because the sin which Hashem condemns so severely, the asterisks in 8, eludes our grasp. It seems that our mental apparatus is not tuned finely enough to identify it. We recall the saying of our sages, God is most severe with those closest to him, kechud asayra, even to a hair's breadth. And that is why we understand, for example, the story in Navi and Yoshua, when Achan, an individual from Shevet Yehuda, takes of the spoils of the city of Jericho, and there was a ban on not taking any of the spoils, and they subsequently lose the next battle in Ai. And Hashem tells Yoshua, you know why you lost? Ki ganvu, ki chashu, Klal Yisrael sinned, they stole. We're talking about one person here. It almost makes it out like the entire people are thieves. We must look for their sin in 9, not in the sphere of action, but in the innermost recess of the heart, bearing in mind the high spiritual level expected of that generation. The point is that Achan's act revealed the very subtle fault in the community of Israel affecting the level of their attachment to Hashem. And that's why continuing in 10a, when you take a look at Cheta Egel, the sin of the golden calf, you almost think it's almost the entire people, or Rov Rubam, the majority of the people who sinned in the golden calf. But yet we see that when Levim punished those who were involved, it was 3,000 people. As Ibn Ezra points out at the end of 10a, only 0.5% of the nation. But yet, the Chumash writes it as if everyone is responsible. Because you have to understand the language of the Chumash using a barometer of the Chumash meaning and what it means. So this is our challenge. Our challenge is to be able to read the Chumash with the eyes of Chazal, with the eyes of understanding what really went on. And that's not to say the Mesilot BaTanach, Rav Moshe writes a fantastic sefer, which goes through essays on how to learn Chumash, Navi, Tanach properly. He offers in 11, Chazal lo ba'u chalila lechafot ha'chata'im kol shehem. The Torah's not here to whitewash and cover up the sins. Adarava, no. Afilu eitzel ishev skulav gavot ha'umavaka yotzei behem. You can even find by the Avos great people. Chashvu leitim pegamim dakim min adakim. Chazal see the smallest errors, the smallest measures. But we don't have the understanding of being able to understand what it's really about. Our challenge is not to read it on a level of shitrius. The brothers kidnapped a brother and sold him. That is our reading of Tanakh on a very superficial level. What really went on? What was really their sin? What are they really held accountable for? That is why it's imperative to read Tanakh with the lenses that we need to read Tanakh with. And this is why Chazal say that when we're talking about certain individuals who sin, Chazal say anyone who says David HaMelech sinned, Reuven sinned, Eino Elotoa, and the Rav HaKadosh from Yisrael Miroshen says, you know what Eino Elotoa means? Not only that you're mistaken, but your whole essence, there's something mistaken about you. You've missed the point of learning. You missed the point of what Tanakh is all about. So again, when we're talking about the Avos HaUma, we're talking about Klal Yisrael, we're talking about the Dor Dea, we're talking about individuals, the Torah is not going to cover up and say no one's ever sinned. Yes, people sin. Yes, people have made mistakes. We need to learn from them. But oy vavoy, if we understand in our limited understanding, with our, as he said before, non-fine-tuned inability to that fine-tuned grasp, to really understand what their sin is. And we have to be very careful not to place our mindset, our values, our hashkafat olam on these incredibly great people. And we need to be able to learn Tanakh with the eyes of Chazal, who understand everything under a magnifying glass and are able to teach us what went wrong and what we're supposed to learn from what went wrong. And the reason for this is why we are so careful about what they did vis-a-vis what I do, right? No one's going to, you know, put me under my magnifying glass. Well, she must have bent and did this. No, why? So Rav Dessler says simply, self-observation shows us in 13 that we possess vast intellectual knowledge of the greatness of Hashem and the extent of our obligations and so on. So much so that if all our knowledge were put into practice, we certainly would become tzaddikim. But it's unfortunately clear that we are not great tzaddikim. Why not? The blocking factor is what we call timtum halev, or the dullness of the heart, which prevents our knowledge from entering our heart and influencing the subconscious springs of action. As a result, our Yetzirah finds it easy to blur and obscure our knowledge in our own minds. We are able to ignore the truth and delude ourselves that the sin we are tempted to do is really not so bad. It's not completely against what we know to be true, and so on. Once we have yielded to temptation once or twice, the matter presents no more problems for us. The battle is over so far as that particular sin is concerned. And that's us. We have a great gap between what we know and what we do, and we rationalize our lives. But at 14, the earlier generations were not like that. They were on a level where dullness of the heart, quote unquote, did not operate. All they knew was immediately present in their heart, and they live their lives on a very high level of devotion. And that is why, when the Yetzer Hara comes to attack them, it's a different Yetzer Hara that's coming to attack us. And when they act in certain ways, or act in any ways, it's different than the way we act. It's different than the way we rationalize. And because they operated on such a different level, with such a different cognizance of God's presence in their lives, we cannot use the same barometer that we measure our lives with the way we measure their lives. And that's why when we read a pasuk like this, Vatelech Vateta Vamidbar, that she went and wandered in the desert. And Rashi, Chazal tell us, she went back to Gugulei Beit Aviya, says Rav Lubi, stop. Understand what this means? It means that her mind wandered for that split second. And that wandering alone was enough to criticize her. And again, this is echoed in Rav Druk in Drash Mordechai, who said, when she went to fill up the Chaymat Mayim, she went to fill it up all the way. He says in 16, we'll start with his introduction in the Aaron 15, Yisod Gedol Ashkafal in Tunuchas Albaso. Our rabbis teach us a fundamental idea in looking at the Ashkafa of Torah. At times, small details, which to us is really irrelevant. If you look at from the eyes of Chazal, that tells us about the essence of the person. Hagar was a great person. She was worthy to see many times Malachi. But, this action of filling up the pitcher of the water all the way, because you know what? It may disappear and she may not have enough. And it may have been an instinctive reaction, a natural reaction. Let me make sure I have enough water. And she's making sure she has enough water after she's witnessed miracles. There's a well out of nowhere, a malach speaking to her. And she probably, Yitachen Shemiyad Achar Kach, says Rav Druk, probably right after she filled up the entire pitcher, she says, "Ugh, I can't believe I did this. I really should have believed that, you know, God will provide for me. Why do I have to have that extra water?" But nevertheless, the fact that her instinctive reaction was, I may not have enough water, God may not provide for me, that on some level, as we'll see, was connected to Gilgulei Beit Aviha. There was a lack, there was a choser emunah here. Hagar is being judged kechut hasara, wandering, her mind wandering, taking a little bit too much water as an instinctive reaction, without thinking, wow, all I need is to take what I need now, and God will provide for me later what I need later. That instinctive reaction, again, on her level, she's held accountable that she lacks emuna, that she's not on the level that she should be on. My friends, this is level number one of understanding Hagar. And it's not only level number one of understanding Hagar, it's level number one of understanding Tanakh. How careful we have to be from being critical, from being, you know, judgmental, and being able to learn Tanakh with the eyes and the vision of our rabbis. So level number one, our question is, how could Hagar have fallen? What does it mean she went back to Gilgulei Beit Aviha? The answer in level number one is, she had a thought to return back to her father's house. She instinctively filled up the pitcher without thinking it through that she should have had more emuna. On Hagar's level, that was a lack of emuna. On Hagar's level, that was returning back to the state of her father's house. The second approach is the approach in Sivas Chaim, Rav Chaim Matlin, where he asked, V'kashe, Sur 17, Ein zederech adam lasur pitom avodat Hashem lavodat zara lahavdil. Isn't this a big switch in a matter of hours to be in Avraham Avinu's tent worshipping Kadosh Baruch Hu down to Gilgulei Beit Aviha worshipping the idols of her father's house? Ella kachum natoshal yitzara, but this is the way of the Yitzhara. And he explains based on Chaim Shulevitz in his very famous essay, which we'll see inside right now, Mirtz Hashem, Sora Maher Minaderech. Shibarega achad hergisha yiridami matzava shel eshet Avram abeit kodesh. Shibau l'sham alochim. It was a major transformation. It was like a shock to the system. Here she was, the wife of Avraham Avinu. Here she was in the holiest person's house that you can imagine. Upiton, suddenly, she finds herself banned into the desert without anything physically or spiritually. The Yirida Pitomit Zu, that shock to the system, that sudden fall, caused her to fall spiritually until she was prepared to go back to the ways of her father. Not that she actually worshipped the Avodah Zarah, but that fall made her inclined toward that direction. This Yesod of Rav Chaim Shulevit is found in Sichos Musar in sources 18 through 21. It's a Yesod that he writes in this essay, Soru Maher Min HaDerech, and he brings it down by the question of Chet HaEgel. How could it be that Klal Yisrael, who witnessed Kriyas Yamsuf, who heard Hashem, right? Atarei Soladat Keshem Olokim, the heavens opened up, and they were able to point at Kriyas Yamsuf. Zekeliva Veil, this is my God, and I will worship him. How could they suddenly be worshiping the Egel? I mean, like, hello? Like, what happened here? So he says what happened here was when the Satan confused them and showed them Moshe Rabbeinu's coffin, and they thought he died. That feeling of confusion, that feeling of bereavement, that feeling of loss, was again what we're talking about, where something major happens, a trauma happens, and it knocks a person out of their equilibrium. Likewise, you see this by Orpah, who was ready to go like Ruth with Naomi, right? I'm ready to go on your terms, follow you. And then suddenly she leaves Naomi and Ruth, and that night she has relations with all these people, gives birth to all these strange people. How did she fall so low? Again, that distance between where she was to where she found herself now, that fall, the fall itself, that gap is what causes this reaction. What happened to Hagar? So we know Rav Hirsch points out what was the trauma for Hagar. Hagar's whole 22, Rav Hirsch, behavior is highly characteristic. It typifies the unrefined Hamite nature. A Jewish mother would never abandon her child, even if all she could do for him would be softly speak to him. But this is, her conduct reflects the cruel egotism of a brutish character. True humanity is marked by a sense of duty that is capable of mastering even the strongest of emotion. What does she do here? She throws him tachar achar asichim, under one of the thorns. She's not even afraid that he may get scratched and even hurt more. And she walks back, harchek mechtavei kashet. She moved away to a distance as archers do. That is just as archers walk backwards from the target and the arrow in 22 to the fullest, furthest point from which they can still see it. So did Hagar walk backwards from Ishmael as far as possible to avoid seeing his distress, but not so far that he would disappear from her sight. This is the conflicting emotions which she struggled. And that's why the Malach says to her, Hashem heard his voice, not your voice. Your voice is a voice of egotism. His is a voice of pain. Had you trusted in God and not thrown the child there, but laid him gently down, had you not sat down at a distance but remained by his side as befits a mother, then you have already seen that the saving well of water there, just where he is. First of all, arise and lift up the boy like a brave mother who never gives way to despair. Then you'll be worthy of God's help. What was the trauma? What was the breaking point for Hagar? For Jewish people, it was seeing Moshe Rabbeinu's coffin. That threw off their equilibrium. Here, her child is she thinks is going to die. But she doesn't respond like, let me dive into Hashem and hold the child there. She throws the child, literally, Batashe, she throws the child right under one of the bushes, and then she calls out. But it's a person who has felt that she's going to lose that which is most dear to her. That experience of throwing the child, of feeling that her child is going to die on her, created this lack of equilibrium. And it's interesting, the Sefer Vayavinu B'Mikra, in 23 and 24, point out, it's as if the Moloch said to our Hagar, the reason why the water stopped is because you stopped believing. It's because Vatelech Vateta, it's because of your fall. And here, the Vayavinu B'Mikra understands the Pasuk so beautifully. Vachaziki Yadech Bo, you have to hold your hand on him. Why? So as Rav Hirsch says, so that you realize that you'll never despair. Says the Vayavinu B'Mikra, in order for you to be saved, you have to be able to get back to the point of equilibrium. You have to get back to the point of being able to hold on and never lose sight of what your focus in life is. You lost it. You lost your faith. You lost your focus. Hachziki et yadech bo. Hold on tight. And then you'll be worthy of God's help. What's the message for us? The message for us is, as it's mentioned in 21, in Lachein al Adam of Chaim Shulevitz, Lizaher ma'od imira lo eza yiridami vadvegato. You have to be careful. When we have quote-unquote fools in our lives, and who doesn't have them? Shelo tigarem lo hitardirut mechamat hayirida v'yared matamata. Be very careful when something suddenly comes our way that the fool shouldn't be a slippery slope. V'alav livchazek ma'od. And here's the key for level number two. We have to be very careful. Lishmor al shivui mishkalo. We have to be very careful to watch our balance. Shelo yehe oved etzot. That you stop losing your focus and recourse of what's correct. V'nivhal miyiridato. And that you're petrified from this fool. Because then, which you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I reached this. That is an opening of the Etzahara, just that you will fall further and further. And that is exactly what Rav Chaim Shulevitz talks about in a brand new Sefer that just came out, 26 through 28, called Chochmas Chaim. It was older Shiurim. I think this was Tufshin Yurket, I don't remember the year. Older Shiurim that Rav Chaim Shulevitz gave, right? The classic ones are found in Sichos Moser, the 3 years. Tufshin Lamed Aleph, I believe, to Tufshin Lamed Gimel. But this Sefer just came out of older Shiurim. And here, he brings this down. He brings down in 28 that shock of Lot, who was by Abraham and suddenly in stone. Hagar, who's by Abraham's house and suddenly in the desert. When we see how far we've fallen, it's not only the trauma of falling, but it's the trauma of falling connected with the disparity of where I was and now where I am. That throws off many people off balance, and then it's very hard to get their equilibrium. And you see this in Pirkei Torah 25. What was the problem? And again, quotes the problem of Hagar. What should she have done? She should have first given the child to drink, and then filled up her pitcher. What does the Chumash say? She filled up her pitcher and then gave her child to drink. What is this a reflection of? It's a reflection of a person on the second level who's lost their equilibrium, who's lost their priorities, who doesn't know the right from wrong. Of course you feed your child, right? You know, on the airplane, you know, put on the mask on your child. Put your mask on yourself and then put it on your child. You have to be safe, and then your child has to be safe. Here, none of them were safe. He was the one who was in the, it's not an exact comparison. He was the one who was starving. She wasn't. She should have first fed him the water, and then she should have then filled up the water for the future. She lost her focus. I think that's why they say in the airplane, first put it on yours, then your child, so that you don't lose your ability to think straight and clear. My friends, this is the natural reaction, is to help our children out. sometimes, like on the airplane, we first have to help ourselves out to be best able to help our children. We have to recognize that this lack of clarity is what affected her. My friends, this is the question that we have to ask ourselves. Are we able, when we fall, are we able, when we lose clarity, are we able to regain our balance? And I think that this is why the Chumash ends this section with, he lived in the desert of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. That in the end, Hagar takes care of him. And the end, Hagar provides for him. In the end, Hagar provides for her future by giving him a wife. That what the Chumash is telling us is that Hagar fell. She fell, she lost her balance, she lost taking care of him in the appropriate way as a mother. But then, the Chumash emphasizes that, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Well, why did it say, and his mother? Why not, and he married a woman from Egypt? His mother took care of him. She was able to get up and regain her balance. That's what this section is about. That we can lose our focus, we can lose our balance. How could she have fallen to a level of being prepared to be Chazra L'Gugule Beit Aviha? Because of a major trauma, a major shock to her system. Our challenge is, life has shocks to our system. Life has curveballs that come our way. We have to be able to pick ourselves up and be able to move on. There's a beautiful idea. Two beautiful ideas that my friend brings in a Sefer, Listen to Your Messages. We said in the Yontif Davening, and those who are lost in the land of Usher will come prophesy to Yeshaya about Messianic times, and those who are displaced in the lands of Egypt, right? We have the Nidachim Eretz Ashur, the Ovdim Eretz Mitzrayim. That is the final tshuva. Those lost in Ashur and those displaced in Egypt will come back and do tshuva. Who is farther removed, one who's lost or one who's displaced, asked from Sadaka Kohen? Surely the one who's lost is farther removed. Why then does he return before the one who's merely displaced? We have to understand the difference, explains Rav Tzadok, between the land of Ashur and the land of Egypt. And this is such a fascinating insight. Ashur was a country of rocky, semi-arid hills, where farmers had to struggle and scrape to bring forth the bounty of the land. But Egypt was a breadbasket. You planted in the rich loam, the Nile River overflowed, and you harvested. If you are lost in the land of Ashur, declares the prophet, if your life has been a spiritual struggle, if it has been a spiritual battle, if you had to fight your Yetzirah, it will be easier to bring you back, even if you lost the battle. But if you were in the land of Egypt, if you do not struggle against the Yetzirah, it will be harder to bring you back, even if you were only displaced. Struggle is a good thing. To fall and to get up is a good thing. And this is that famous line that Rav Huttner writes in his Talmud, who says, I'm tired, I tried so hard at 30, but I don't see myself getting any better. I don't see growth, it's such a difficult struggle. And Rav Huttner wrote back, and this is so important and so classic, never give up. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. Tzadik falls 7 times and gets up. That's what it's all about. The battles, the struggle, that's a tzadik. What do you think the pasuk means? That a tzadik gets up even though he falls? That misses the entire point. The true intent of Shlomo Melech is to teach us that the way to rise is through repeated falls. You become a tzaddik by falling down and rising, the asterisk in 30. You grow from the experience to become a better person. Growth comes from struggle. It's not automatic. You can't coast and grow. You've got to fight to grow. You've got to struggle to grow. You may lose the battles. You might fight and lose them. But you can win the war. You can become better and bigger by the falls, by the stumbling. That's the road to becoming a tzaddik. We can grow from our struggles. And here, Rabbi Frank quotes the idea, it's brought down, of the how careful we have to be with these stories of tzaddikim, which are so important to read our children. But sometimes they get this sense that a tzaddik is born at the age of 2 being perfect. Well, I wasn't born at the age of 2 being perfect. You know, I even hit my brother at the age of 5. So there's no hope for me. No. We have to be, obviously, in the correct measure, but be able to talk about the struggles the Chafetz Chaim had to be the Chafetz Chaim, the struggles people go through, because it's through the struggles that we learn. And it's likewise true for our children to see sometimes our struggles, obviously depending on the situation, to see that we could struggle, that we could have a difficulty, and that it's okay to fall, and it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to learn from them and to rise from them. My friends, the first idea is it was the swaying in her mind, perhaps, how careful we have to be in analyzing Tanakh. She filled it up instinctively without even thinking. The second level is that sudden shock of being from Avraham's house, lost in the desert, her child. She throws him under one of the bushes. She's not even thinking straight. She fills up the pitcher before she takes care of her child. She's lost her equilibrium. But she gets back up. She takes care of him. She finds him a wife. She marries Avraham Avinu in the end. We have to learn from Hagar that sometimes when we fall, we also do things which are lacking emunah, that bring us down that slippery slope into a very dangerous area. But we have to be somebody who's going to be very well aware of our falls, very well aware of our struggles. The more self-awareness we have, the more realization that we have that, oh my, I realize that the why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling is the shock to the system of where I was and where I am has led me to. You know, you often have this with girls or boys that come back from studying in Eretz Yisrael. They live in one environment, they go to Israel in another environment, they come back, it's a shock to their system. Sometimes the shock to the system is just too much. And they say, I can't hold on to what I had there, let me just go back to where I was. No. You have to realize that there is a lack of equilibrium, and now, how do I balance myself? How do I find that that path of stability? That's level two. Level three is my favorite level. I've mentioned this to our Torah quite a number of times before, because it's one of my favorite ones, and hence, when it's this parsha, how could I not teach this whole section just in order to give over this idea? I don't know if that's making a mountain out of a molehill, but in Torah, there's no molehills, it's all mountains. 31. Chazal Sirashi explained, Pirkei Torah quotes this, this is quoted by a lot of the Mefarshim. I chose this because of the English, and strayed in the desert to mean that Hagar returned to the idols of her father's house. Where in these words is there an allusion to return to idol worship? Surely the pasuk means that Hagar was lost in the desert. However, Mordechai Pogromsky Zatzal explains that Amunah grants a man a unique perspective on the situation in which he finds himself. Amunah imbues one with the understanding that the hand of Hashem is behind all occurrences, and that each occurrence is part of the Almighty's master plan. One can be, quote-unquote, lost only in relation to the final destination one has set for himself, but one is never truly lost because he is actually where Hashem wants him to be. He is merely experiencing another stage of his master plan, and someone with Amunah lives with this conviction. The Torah declared that Hagar strayed, she was lost. She had departed from the high level of Amunah that she had possessed in Avram's presence. For had she retained the Amunah, she would not have felt lost and strayed, but she would have instead have remained steady on her path, knowing that even her banishment by Avram was part of Hashem's plan for her. She was not lost. This is where she was supposed to be. This, my friends, is such a yesod in life. It's something I tell my kids and my students over and over again. You know, when we're lost. Oh, Ma'im, are we lost again? We're not lost. We may not be where we wanted to be or we thought we would be, but we are not lost. We are exactly where Hashem wants us to be, and we need to be happy to be where Hashem wants us to be, because this was obviously His plan to be here and not on the road we're supposed to be on. We're never lost. Kadosh Baruch Hu is directing Hameichi Mitzadei Gaver, our footsteps at all times. One of the Sfarim brings down a story about Rabbi Rav Pogromsky, where he was once going with another rabbi in a moel to do bris milah on Russian Jews who were Balei Tshuva would come back. And they were sent out on a train to go to a certain town. And they were involved in talking and learning. And they completely were so self-absorbed in their learning that they missed a stop. And until they realized that they were quite a few stops, you know, ahead, that they had to switch tracks and go back the other way. So the rabbi who was with Rav Mordechai Pogromsky said, oh no, we're lost, we have to go back. And he responded, there's war, you're never lost, you're exactly where Hashem wants them to be. So this other rabbi says, oh, that's a nice war, but it's not realistic. They turn to the other, you know, side of the train, you know, the other side of the station. And as they're waiting for the train to go back in the other direction, they see a yid running over to them. Rabbis, rabbi, I had a son. Today is the eighth day. I need to do a bris milah. Do you know of a moel who's around here? So he turns to them and says, it's not just a war. You know, they were accompanied by a moel. That was what they were set out to do, was to do a bris milah. It's not a war. It's life. Sometimes we see it. Sometimes we don't. Life is about, as our pasuk says, Vayivkach, Hashem opened her eyes. Sometimes our eyes are open. Sometimes our eyes are closed. But the reality is, wherever we are, this is where Hashem wants us to be. And I'll just add personally that I think about this word a lot whenever I do these trips by myself to America, and I take the Hertz Never Lost, Ever Lost, I don't know, I call it Ever, Ever Lost, they call it Never Lost, and I'm lost, which is, I have no sense of direction, and I'm not where I want to be. So I remember this. This is like such a calming factor in somebody who's not a calm personality. And I have frequently pulled over, taken out a Tehillim, said Kapitul Tehillim, and said there obviously is some sparks that need to be picked up in this particular unforsaken place that I'm at. So Hashem, you landed me here to pick up these sparks. I'll say some Tehillim, pick up these sparks, and hopefully I don't have to land here again to pick up any more sparks, and I can find my way. This idea that everything is where it's supposed to be is the idea that I'd like to share some ideas from Rav Gamliel Rabinovich. The essence of Amuna, Tzitziva Amuna, translated into English, where he says, 32, when we reach the recognition that everything is the way it is supposed to be, and we implant this truth and reality within our heart, then all of our actions will be viewed through this perspective, and we'll always be happy with our lot. We'll have no reason to complain against others, nor will we become upset, for everything is carried out precisely according to Hashem's will, as is befitting to be done. There's nothing to blame anyone about, for he himself is the cause of everything that happens to him. A person with the Muna will joyously accept Hashem's way of interacting with him, knowing that this is the will of the Creator, who has meted out what is befitting in every way precisely for him. And this is what Yonah HaNavi says on the ship, Bishvili, because of me, Hatsar Hazeh, is this storm. 34, nothing in this world happens by chance. Every single nuance of our lives is under direct and specific divine providence of our Creator. Shlomo Melech wrote in Kohelet, everything has a time, and there's a moment for everything under the heaven. Shlomo Melech is teaching us with these words that everything has its predestined time, and will occur through the hands of the particular agent that Hashem assigns for that precise moment. These three, the tikkun, what needs to be accomplished, the person performing the action, and the exact time when it is to be carried out, are like the chut ha-meshulash, the three-ply cord that should not be severed. Lo b'mehera yinatek, also from Kohelet. This is one of the most important aspects of Emunah. And indeed, this is one of the most remarkable distinctions that one who possesses true Emunah merits. A person with true Emunah is safe from arguments, tension, conflicts, etc., etc. The lesson we must internalize is the most vital power we possess is to successfully overcome all our nisyonos is Emunah. When a person plants and nurtures Emunah within the depths of his heart, that there's no such thing as coincidence, that everything is guided by Hashgacha Prati, he will no longer feel he has any challenges. And if a person realizes that everything that happens is according to Hashgacha Prati, he will no longer fear nisyonos. For in every situation and circumstance, he'll be able to discern what Hashem wants from him. Confusion, lack of clarity, and the ability to contend with and prevail over nisyonos, over challenges, is found among people who do not possess the degree of emunah and bitachon appropriate for them. This is the level that Hagar, on her level, there was some lack. When it says, Vatelech vateta b'midbar, that she was wandering in the desert, the fact that she felt that she was wandering, the fact that she felt that she was lost, that is the Avodah Zarah. That is the point of idolatry. on that sublime level. Because if you really understood that you're never wandering, if you really understood that this is where you need to be, then she wouldn't have felt that she was wandering. This is Hugger on her level. What is she being critiqued for? That she didn't realize that where she was at is where Hashem wanted her to be at. And because she didn't realize this, on her level, this lack of emunah, this lack of understanding, is considered as if she returned back to the ways of her father's house of idolatry. This is what we have to understand. And it's interesting, Rav Victor Miller, L'titcha Elyon brings down in 36, says that this vort of knowing where we are, and if you don't know where you are, then it's akin to idolatry, is not only true when we're physically lost in life, it's also Shigami Shiyeshlo in the asterisk in 36, Shifa Bechayab, one whose whole focus and desire is to be able to experience all the pleasures of this world. This person is also lost. They don't realize that the whole purpose in this world is to live a life of Torah. That the greatest pleasure they could have is a life of Torah. To always look out for. We're not talking about having pleasures. Of course you should have pleasures in this world. But if that's your total focus, if that's the path you're taking, Maves Siman, it's a reflection, Shitoehu bat Darko, that you're also lost on your way. And in this mistake, Yeshgam Avak Davak, it's a smidget of Avodah Zarah. Because if a person knows that they're walking with Hashem, then there's no greater pleasure, no greater happiness. Why would you be searching for anything else? If you're searching for something aside from something spiritual, it means that you're not happy with your spiritual life. And you're lost. You're strayed. You've gone off the path. And this is what Rabbi Franz speaks about. It's never too little, it's never too late, it's never enough. This is what happens to us in 37. We make an ikkar into a tuffel, and a tuffel into an ikkar. We make what's important secondary into what's secondary important. The issues in life should become major focal points, become minor ones, and vice versa. I've brought this before. I have a friend in the rabbinate in 38 who was counseling a high-powered couple who remain at work until late at night. Every night, their children, who were cared for by a nanny, would stand at the window and wait for their parents to come home. The rabbi asked, "Why are you doing this?" "We're doing it for the good of our children," they responded. "We want to provide them with everything they need in life." Everything, that is, except one vital thing, a set of parents. This couple fell into the trap of making the means into an end. And that's what Rav Ruderman Zatzal, Rav Shiva of Ner Yisrael, when he would speak at a Pidyon HaBen, he would say that when the Kohen asked the father, "Ma bayis tvei, what do you prefer? What do you want more? You want the 5 shekels or the baby?" He said, that question is asked to us constantly in our lives. Do you want the life of Yaakov or of Esav? Are your sights set on totally physical existence, or do you think about spirituality? Is it a question of do you live for Olam Hazeh or for Olam Haba? This is a question that we need to ask ourselves. So my friends, on the first level, it was the thought of returning back to our parents' house, how careful you have to be. On the second level, it's the idea how that fool jolted her entire system, her equilibrium. She didn't even feed her child first. She wasn't even clear how you have to fall and how you have to get up. On the third level, Vatela Fateta Bamidbar, the fact that she thought she was lost was an indication of that she went back to the idolatry, that she lost the emunah. And the final level, which is really dovetails level number 3, is the Sefer Ha'aros of Zelig Epstein, who says, after she davened, and she was able, source 40, to see these great miracles, Hashem opened her eyes, Vayivkach Elokim et Einah, and she saw the Be'er Mayim. Hashem didn't create it, it was there. He opened her eyes. And he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo yetzar Be'er Mayim, HaBe'er HaYasham, Rak Hayta Tzricha Livkoach Einah, Ubezelim Duna Chazal, for here our rabbis teach us. Shekol Ma Shadam Tzarich Munach Lepitcho, whatever we need is right in front of us. Sometimes you just have to wait till Hashem opens your eyes. The Hagar nitba'a b'zeh. This is what Hagar was held responsible for. Shelo hamina. She didn't believe that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu sent her water, yishalach shuv, that she'll have enough water. And that's what it means that she went back to the ways of her father. That she saw the hand of Hashem, and she's worried, what will I have tomorrow? According to Sefer Haros, and this is an idea that we saw a little bit before, what was it that returned her back to her father's house? How could she have fallen? The answer is that she acted, as we saw earlier, on her instincts, and she didn't think and realize that miracles were happening to her and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was taking care of her. What was the lack of Emunah here? That her wandering, she felt that she was alone. She didn't feel the hand of Hashem protecting her and guiding her. A Malach is speaking to her, an angel from heaven. Hashem opens her eyes and she sees this vision of the water. And what does she do? She fills it up to make sure she has enough. That's a Choser Emunah. And this is what the Or Yael speaks about, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman. The Or Daniel quotes this idea and he says, if you are on, in 41 and 42, if you are on a chariot of the king, and the king says, I will provide all of your needs, to then bring food with you is an affront to the king. She is being carried by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What is she doing by filling up her water bottle to the end? Does she not realize that she is in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hand? And he says, and this is the bold in 41. V'nei mamash kei mabiti mishamayim al adam. Likewise, from heaven they look on a person. Hadoeg v'omar ma yochal machar. What will eat tomorrow? Umareh ba'atzmo shemekatnei emunahu. This is also a lack of faith. Are we not also riding on the chariot of Hashem? He takes care of us. The imagery that the Or Yael gives in 42 is the pasuk. And Hatehilim, Hashlech al Hashem Yahavcha v'hu yikalkalecha, cast it upon Hashem your burden and He will support you. When you put your burden on it, let's say on a camel, on a donkey, so you don't feel the burden anymore. It's carrying it. The mashal that they give is if a person's on a, you know, walking along the way, carrying a very heavy pekalach, and somebody comes by with a horse and wagon and says, can I give you a lift or a car? You say, sure. So you get into the car, and you're still holding the bag. And you say, hello, why are you holding your bag? I'm giving you a ride. They say, it's enough, you're giving me a ride. You have to give my package a ride too. Hello, it's the same ride. Let go. We hold on too much. It's a kochi v'otzem yodi shasali et achayel hazeh. It's this feeling of, I need to be in control. I need to be in charge. And that was the feeling that Hagar had. That was the Miktane Emunah, that she felt that she needed to be in control. That is akin to Avodah Zarah, Kilgulei Beit Aviha, when she wasn't able to see that Hashem is providing for her. And I think we could perhaps argue that Hagar landed up on this level. Our question is, how did she land on this level? Was she not living in Avraham Avinu's house? So perhaps we can say, is that the moment that Hagar puts or throws her son under the bushes, at that moment, she, at a certain level, takes away the responsibility of her parent to her child. Like, you know, hope for the best, right? And she moves far away from him. At that moment that she does that, there is almost a correlation, Hashem Sucha, what happens in heaven. Because we know, and this is Sichus Musar 43 on the Pasuk, of Lech Tachacharai B'midbar B'etzlos Ruah, Klai Yisrael follow Hashem in the desert without having taken provisions with them. That the imagery that Rav Chaim Shulevitz uses of Tzal is the imagery of a little baby who's being carried by his mother. Wherever the baby is, the baby says, you ask the baby, where are you? They say, I'm in my mother's hands. They can be in Hong Kong. They can be in the supermarket. They can be on an airplane. It's irrelevant. I'm in my mother's hands. That feeling of being in one's mother's hands is the feeling that God's going to take care of us, that God's going to protect us, that God's going to fill all our needs. The moment that Hagar sends her son away, The moment that Hogarth sends her son under the bushes, at that moment it's as if she has detached herself from feeling in Hashem's hands. And once you've lost that feeling of being in Hashem's hands, then you feel like, I have to take care of myself. I have to provide for myself. And that's why she goes and fills up the pitcher all the way, making sure she has enough and not just take what she needs now. That fear of, oh my gosh, I may not have for tomorrow. Oh my gosh, let me save up. It's a fear that she doesn't feel that she's taken care of, even though she's on the chariot of the king. That was created by her throwing her son under the bushes. By taking her son back, by holding on to her son, Hashem says, now you can open your eyes. Now I can open your eyes. When you've taken your son back and you've held your hand on him, taking responsibility, reattachment, so to speak in psychological terms, when she was able to work on that reattachment, Hashem says, now you can work on the reattachment with me as well, and open her eyes, and she should have then realized that Hashem is providing for her. And that is the message that we need to see in our lives in 44 and 45, that we have to learn from, that we are in the chariot of the king, that we are being provided for by Hashem, that we are in Hashem's hands, no matter what happens to us. And that we have to realize that just like Hashem provided for Hagar, and she was held responsible for not having this level of faith, we have to know that Hashem provides for us. The way, in Source 44, the way the Rav Druk in Drash Mordechai, 44 is Drash Mordechai, speaks about it, he says it's like the way the fish swallow other fish. When you ever open a fish, you will see that other fish come in head first, which is very strange, right? If you open up a fish, you'll see that the head of the fish is by the tail of the bigger fish, yeah? Why? Because when the fish goes around trying to get other fish, it should, and the other fish are running away, it should capture the back of the fish, right? You're running after a fish, he's running away. So it should be, the tail should come in first. The tail doesn't come in first because it could harm the fish and kill it. Hashem, in his infinite wisdom, even though the big fish thinks it's running after fish A, Hashem puts fish B into his mouth, head first. Not what he was intended. That wasn't his intended target. Because we don't know where Hashem is going to provide us with. We have to realize that we're in Hashem's hands. And he's the one who gives us what we need. And that's why Rav Dessler says, L'titchal Yom brings down. Amar Rabbi Binyamin HaKol B'cheskat Sumim. We're all like blind people until Hashem opens up our eyes. That's that nusach we say when we lose something. So says Rav Dessler, Haya adam sarich lizaher b'chol yimei chayav, a person has to be careful all his days, l'gashesh tamid et darko b'eretz achayim. We have to really feel out our path in this world, b'zihirut k'dei levadesh sheino toeh b'darko, that we aren't lost in our way, just like a suma, a blind person, lo aleinu, who's feeling around. Kamapelahu, isn't it amazing how people realize that they're working so hard, and they realize that their money is coming from a totally different place. So really, the wandering around and the filling up of the water are really one and the same. When we walk around blindly, when we walk around thinking that we're in control, when we're walking around here, there, thinking that this business deal is going to do it, and that's going to do it, and this project's going to be successful, and the fish is coming from a totally different place, we realize that we have to be able to recognize that we have to do our ishtavos, we have to do what we need to do. You have to fill up the pitcher, but you don't have to overfill it. You don't have to think that I'm not going to have the water for tomorrow. You have to realize that you are in the king's chariot, and he is providing for you. Put down your pekalach, put down your burden. He is carrying you, and he's carrying your burden as well. And therefore, my friends, what we've seen today is one Rashi is teaching us rules for life. On the one hand, how careful we have to be when we talk about, quote-unquote, the sins of great people. That on her level, the thought of swaying back to her father's house was enough. That instinctive reaction was enough to say that she veered away from her high level. And how careful we have to be in the way we analyze the people in Tanakh. the second level, when we fall, we have to realize and be cognizant that that shock to the system is a shock to the system. We have to fall and we have to get up. Kisheva yipol tzadi v'kam. It's through the falling that we get up. The usher, people who struggle, are easier to come back. On the third level, we have to understand that her wandering itself, thinking she was lost, for a moment to think you're not where Hashem wants you to be, that is straying to your father's house. Hashem orchestrates all the aspects of our lives. When we start looking for other things to bring us pleasure and fulfillment in life, are we not also straying from the right path? Ma bayis tray, what do we prefer in life? And finally, the final level, taking too much water is an indication that you don't realize that you're in Hashem's chariot. That's the wandering away from the focal point. That we have to realize that we are Hashem's children, that Hashem takes care of us as a parent takes care of a child, never lets them go. It's that nursing mother imagery, that the child being completely cocooned by their mother. That's the feeling that we need to have with Hashem. And halacha l'maisa in our lives, of course we have to go out to work, of course we have to do ishtadlus, we have to put in our effort. But it's not about us. Don't overfill the pitcher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for every person. And we are like that blind person who's walking around blind. And the fish is going to come in from a different direction because Hashem provides every person with exactly what they need when they need it.